through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Well, I would say happy Monday, but it doesn't really feel like one this morning, Tom and Jake, because Seahawks fans are upset to have seen Seattle dealt their first loss of the season. You could have been 6-0. Instead, you're looking at 5-1 after losing your first game, this one to the Arizona Cardinals, your first game against an NFC West opponent. A question that we were talking about this morning, and I want to continue this conversation, is why did it get away? You guys both have really good points you want to make. I have mine. We don't agree on everything, but I think we can all agree that this was a game they could have won, that they had the talent to win it. They could have done it. There were several times, and I know that listeners agree with me, there were several times where you thought, like, that could have done it. That could have won them the game. And then, subsequently, that play, that penalty, lost them one. So, Jake, I'm going to get started with you. Why'd it get away?
Well, Stacy, it's frustrating to sit here this Monday and to be having this conversation because the Seahawks should be 6-0 today. They legitimately should be 6-0. But the Seahawks couldn't slam the door despite multiple opportunities to do so. That's the difference. And that is why you wake up this morning and you're feeling frustrated. You're feeling angry because, quite frankly, they deserve to lose. They deserved to lose this game. 6:44 left to play in the fourth quarter. You're up by 10. Stupid penalty from Benson Mayo on the field goal. You try to run out the clock to finish the game. You can't. The Seahawks couldn't come up with a stop. They couldn't stop Kyler Murray at the end of the game whatsoever. Russell Wilson and the offense had two chances in overtime to win the game, and surprisingly, they don't come through. He doesn't come through, and he throws three picks in the game. I mean, and three picks that are you know, decisions that you just don't see him make. And you compile all of that together, and that is why you're sitting here today, 5-1, which is, hey, you're still atop the NFC West. It's not like the sky is falling for the Seattle Seahawks, but it's frustrating when you miss out on opportunities, on precious wins that are in your hands, and you let them slip away. And that's currently where we sit at this Monday.
I'm also frustrated.
Hello, my name is Tom Wassel the Third, and I am frustrated.
And I am all welcome, Tom.
Hello, Tom. And I'm a Seahawks fan.
Yeah, I feel it. Yeah, look, there wasn't really any point in the game where I thought that they were going to lose it until they actually lost it. Like, it was only when I had to write my instant reaction, going back and saying, okay, well, what was the point where it started to really come undone? I'll point to the Benson Mayoa leverage unsportsmanlike conduct as the play. Like, that's not the reason, but if I have to point to a play where everything started to go wrong, I mean, that was certainly it for me. But first, like, I have to give the Cardinals some credit. They hung in there. Mm-hmm. They were down 27-17. It looked like the pace of the game was going to stay that way, where maybe the Seahawks maintained roughly a 10-point lead, and they did for a while. And then, but they hung in there. Kyler played well enough. He overcame some adversity of his own. Their defense had a huge impact, especially as the game went on, forcing Russell to make a mistake or two. It seemed like in overtime particularly that the Seahawks offensive line was getting overwhelmed. They were confused. It seemed, was it Vance Joseph, their defensive coordinator? He saved like all his creativity for the very end. All of a sudden, the offensive line had no idea what was coming. Russell had no idea what was coming. There was blocking was just not there at the end. So I'll give the Cardinals as a team some credit. I thought Russell played extremely well for the most part. Yeah, the picks are bad, but two of them, the defense, the Seahawks defense, actually kind of let him off the hook because Diggs got one right back, and then they got four straight stops in the red zone. So two of those picks really didn't have a big impact on the game. Yeah, they lost possessions, and they lost potential points, but I didn't feel like Russell really killed them until the end. I mean, some of the – you got to look at his entire game. Some of those throws he made were just insane. and the catches that Lockett made, Metcalf too. I mean, he should have had a tie or a win. I thought Russell did play reasonably well, certainly well enough to win. But again, defense, no pass rush all night long, couldn't contain anything. After DK's tackle, they make the four huge plays, like I said. But other than that, no answer. Mayoa's penalty killed them. Eventually, they were going to lose a game like this because of the defense, and it finally happened. Let's go. I want to hear Rabel narrating the Mayoa penalty. Let's hear cut two.
Yeah, yeah. He jumped. I'm not sure of this, but I think Bobby got his hands on the top of one of the linemen, and they call a leverage thing where you're using your hands to springboard over the top. I'm not sure about that, but that's what I think happened.
Okay. Nope. So Pete was basically clueless as to what happened there. I'll just wrap up here by saying one last thing. On Russell, we can always play the if not for the picks, they would have won game. But problem with that to me is, A, it only examines the surface. It doesn't really look at the details. And also, that theory demands that Russell be perfect 100% of the time. Eventually, they're going to have to win a game where Russell doesn't play well. Maybe this is it. He won't always be. And I think the defense needs to do their part. They didn't.
I do think they're going to have to win a game where Russell doesn't play well, Tom. And this was a perfect example of that not happening. I also think, though, this wasn't Russell Wilson just not playing well. I mean, two picks, you still could have potentially won this game. Three interceptions is hard to overcome. I don't care if you're Peyton Manning or Russell Wilson, or if you're Mitch Trubisky, or like a backup being thrown in to a situation last second. Like, the best quarterbacks, it doesn't matter. Three interceptions will not often win you a game. I know that a lot of this is on the defense. I'd say the majority of this is on the defense. And I'm not going to win anyone over by saying this, because everyone loves Russell Wilson because he is fantastic. Like, if you get to a Super Bowl this year, it will be because Russell Wilson led you there. It will be because he played like this year's MVP. That's why you'll get to a Super Bowl. That's the only hope that you have, because your defense has not been good. They're not going to be a top 10 defense by the end of the year. I don't care whether Jamal Adams comes back. And I'm not normally negative. I like a lot of guys on this defense personally as players. Great. But like, it will be because of Russell Wilson. That said, three interceptions is very difficult to overcome. If you want to give your defense credit, Tom, like you said, they got you out of scoring, into scoring positions again, because they took two of those interceptions back, one with a four down stop and the other one by getting an interception on the very next play. So I know that we can play this card of Russ can't be, you know, perfect 100% of the time. Three picks is not good, period. And I know that people are hesitant to hear that because everyone loves Russell Wilson. And he is a star, and he is a great player. I will tell you right now, Russell Wilson would like especially that last one back. And I would almost guarantee you that Russell Wilson looks at that and says, like, that was my least favorite play of the game. I hated that play.
Well, that's why you look at this situation right now. And here in cut number one, you can hear it from Russell Wilson himself, probably the hardest that he's ever been on himself in his entire career.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we played a great game except for those three plays. I mean, honestly, and those were my fault, so... You know, there's so much that we can do, and we have so much confidence. Our confidence is not going to waver. They're a great football team, too, and we knew it was going to be a battle. It always is, and down here and whenever we play. You know, nothing really changes except for the fact that we just have to tighten up some things. I have to be better, which I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to playing the next game. I wish we could play tomorrow. And that's just you know, our mentality, and we'll be back stronger. We'll be better.
I promise you those three interceptions from Russell Wilson – are eating at him, mm-hmm. and are definitely picks that they were costly, and they are in situations that it just can't happen, and we rarely see from Russ. So yeah, Russell was absolutely part of the equation of this loss. There's no question about that. You know, defense, Tom, as you had mentioned earlier, they bailed him out on two. Last one you can't recover from. I think that you it's such a bummer, because without those three plays, Russell Wilson is playing a phenomenal mm-hmm. game, setting records.
Yeah.
Tyler Lockett has an unbelievable game. And to see those plays come up, it's frustrating. To see the defense have those plays come up is frustrating. And probably the play that drives me the most crazy, and I don't like to bring it up as the reason why it got away, because I hate blaming refs for losses. I have a really hard time doing it. But you're up 27-17, 10-point lead in the middle of the third quarter, 3rd and 5, and Bobby Wagner does the right thing in crushing the tight end coming across the middle. That's what you're taught to do. That's good, clean football. And they throw an unnecessary roughness flag on Bobby Wagner, and that leads to a Kyler Murray touchdown. That changed another aspect and complexion of the game where the Arizona Cardinals would be punting in that moment. That was another key moment in that game. And so there's a lot of things I look at, and simply I come back to the idea of, look, 6:44 left to play in the fourth quarter, up 10 points. You didn't close the door on the Arizona Cardinals, and that's the reason why you're not 6-0 today, and the Seahawks deserve to lose.
Yeah. No, I think that's well said by both of you guys, and I know that I'm not one to always play the silver lining card, but I think that, in my opinion, there's two ways to look at this if you are looking for one. One, if you're someone like me who says, Russ can't throw three picks, period, I would much rather lose a game because your best player makes mistakes that are incredibly uncharacteristic for him, and you trust that he's not going to make those again, than lose a game because of things that will always come back to bite you. Two, your defense had no sacks. I don't know that they got a pressure. They had, yeah, two turnovers.
Oh,
but,
no. They had one pressure and 48
dropbacks. You had one pass defended in 48 dropbacks, and you lost a game by 3 points. That's how good this team is. I mean, I know the defense is atrocious. You had a bad, objectively bad performance from the defense outside of, like, some highlight plays with turnovers. You lost a game by 3 points.
I just want to add one last thing. That's why, with Russell Wilson and the three picks, like when you say, you know, whether you're Peyton Manning or Mitch Trubisky, I get you're right, because usually when guys like that throw three picks, they don't get to 34 points, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Usually what happens when you give away that many possessions, you end up just not scoring enough points, and you say, oh, God, we lost by 14. You know, we should have been closer. In this case, they were up. First of all, they outpaced their own points per game rate, right?
They did.
Because they, what was it, 33.8? They raised that probably to 34 even in this game. So they still had
the second fewest given up per game. I mean, that's 18. Outstanding.
Yeah.
And you know what? And I appreciate that Russell says what he does and putting it on himself. I mean, that's being a good leader. It really was a team loss, though, when you look at it. The defense did their usual, you know, giving up all kinds of yards and points job. Russell wasn't perfect. Offensive line ultimately played well throughout the game, but then late in the game let them down because they were out-schemed, basically. So it was a total team effort. I mean, the penalties, there was enough of them to go around. It really wasn't just one thing.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Tom Wassel, Jake Heap, Stacey Rost here, talking about what got away for the Seattle Seahawks. Plenty to get into. We're going to get to it later in the show also. But first, let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
One of the greatest, most inspiring hustle plays I've ever seen, dare I say we've ever seen, by DK Metcalf on that Buda Baker interception. That had me as fired up as I've ever been over one play that I've ever seen. But much like the Jermaine Curse circus catch in the Super Bowl they lost, how will that play be remembered because it happened in a game they lost, Stacey?
It's a good question. I think this one is going to be different for two reasons. One, there's a lot of hype around DK Metcalf. We were all watching it in primetime together, and all of us were on social media talking about it at the same time. It happened early in a game, and it remained a highlight for a while. Two, this loss doesn't hurt as much as Super Bowl 49, period.
Well, yeah.
So I think that there's not, you know what I mean? Like the weight of it, there's still a lot of hope after this. Super Bowl 49 was like, all right, book closed, end of story. That's your season. You're done. This one is, hey, make this a lesson learned rather than an end of your story. And so I think it's a bit easier to swallow a loss when it happens in week seven for you, as opposed to the final game, the most important game of the season. I think this is one that does get remembered.
This play in particular from DK Metcalf, absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I'll tell you why here in just a second. You look at this play with DK Metcalf, this will live on forever in Seahawks lore. This play in particular, we will always remember. Hey, do you remember that time DK Metcalf just absolutely hawked down Buda Baker and just blew by everybody else? This was a legendary play. And a reason why this is a legendary play, as I'm looking through my Twitter feed and I follow so many coaches around the country, they're all using this as an example. If you truly love the game, if you truly love your teammates, if you're a selfless player, this is the type of performance you're going to see. This is, in one play, this is synonymous with being a good teammate, being all about the culture, being a hustle guy. And so this play right here, I guarantee you, will not just live in lore of Seahawks. This will be an example for many other teams, many other athletes for years and years to come. So the reason why that Pete Carroll called this one of the greatest plays he's ever seen, because this one hits him personally, because this is something that they talk about all the time. They show this in team meeting all the time. When you talk about how well he's able to get new players to come in and buy into their culture, it's because he almost indoctrinates them when they get here. He's always constantly showing them and reminding them, doesn't matter if it's Bobby Wagner who's been here for 9 years, reminding them what Seahawk football is all about, and they'll show example clip after clip after clip of, you know, guys on the Seahawks doing these same type of plays over the years, other players from around the NFL and college. I guarantee you this will be one of the very first plays anybody sees when they talk about Seahawk culture and the way Seahawk football and the way it's played. DK Metcalf's play right here chasing down Buda Baker will be, if not number one, the very second play that they show.
It's like his gift to the world. Question number two.
Number two.
What kind of difference would Jamal Adams have made in this game, guys? First, let's hear from Pete Carroll, then I'll ask Stacey. This is Pete on with Danny and Gallant this morning. Cut three.
I don't feel like we've been at full strength. I don't think that we've seen the best of us. I think it's going to come here in time, and we're going to have a chance to see us. It's a long season. Our fundamentals are solid. We know what we're doing. We're working hard at it. We did have a couple mistakes like you do, but those eliminated, getting back to full strength. We need to see what Jamal looks like when he gets back in with us and see how that factors, because we were really, really excited about what he was bringing. He'll be back soon. I think we just got to keep hanging in there until we find it. Looking forward to getting a little boost from Daryl Taylor when he comes back, you know, and things like that. And just continuing to grow.
All right, let's forget about Taylor for a second. What do you think about Adams, Stacey?
I think he absolutely makes a huge difference. I'm actually going to, I mean, my answer is yes, he makes a difference in this game. But I'm actually going to borrow from someone else. I was on the Real Hawk Talk podcast, and there was one of the podcast hosts, Nathan, said something that I thought was a wonderful take that pretty much sums up how I would feel about it, which is, if you don't think that Jamal Adams would be the difference in this game, you shouldn't have given up 2 first-round picks for him. I think whenever you give up that much for a player in a 3-point game, that's how you should always look at it. Would this player have been the difference in the game? If the answer is yes, he's worth making a sacrifice to be on your team. So that's how I feel about it. I think that this is a guy who he's great at tackling, especially open field tackling. He would have helped to stifle that run game even as a safety. He would have added to your pass rush. Missing 3 games, he's still tied for the lead in sacks on your team with 2. I mean, he absolutely would have made a difference.
Yes. Jamal Adams makes a difference. Now, how big of a difference? I'm not entirely sure, because right now you have a historically bad defense. And now I think after this loss, we can start to look at this objectively, and we can see that, hey, you know, this team's come up with big plays and big moments, and they've bailed themselves out, and they've been able to win despite that. But they are 479 yards allowed per game. The next closest is 425. That's the Atlanta Falcons. They're a dumpster fire right now. And we are by and far surpassing them, right? I mean, just overall, I mean, it's bad. It's real bad right now. And Jamal Adams will help us. But how much? Does he take you from 32nd to 28? I mean, I hope that this group can improve and they can find their stride. But I think there's some bigger changes that need to occur here in order for this group to truly, truly get better.
He only needed to be responsible for taking 3 points off the board last night. And we would have had a tie. Three.
Number three.
Gross.
I wanted a tie so
I know
badly,
you did. I was so...
I know
like,
you,
as it was,
you're sick and twisted.
First of all, there was a moment when all of our bold takes were coming true. The Seahawks got the first takeaway and gave up, technically on defense, fewer yards than the Arizona Cardinals, which I said that they would. Tom said that they'd get a tie, and Jake said that they would hold them to under 100 yards on the ground. At one point, all of those were happening. And there was a point when I thought it might actually be a tie to end the game. And I did not want it to be right because I knew that Tom would start every show by being like, oh, also, just before I forget, I was right on Bold Take Friday.
You remember that time I
remember that time I did that?
All right, one last quick question. Which penalty was more gut-wrenching? Mayoa's leverage call on the field goal or Moore's offensive holding on what would have been the game-winning touchdown by DK in overtime? Stacey.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, no. I'm only going to give it to Moore because of the moment, but there's a very good argument you could make for Mayoa. Like a
I think both
one.
Of them... Yeah, both of them are devastating. I would say it's probably more because you just had the glimpse of a touchdown.
It was there. That's
all
what it
the
was.
Craziness that ensued, and you just had this moment of, oh my gosh, we just won the game. My house erupted, was going absolutely bonkers, and then to have that taken away from you, ripped away from you, and then knowing that you're going to have a third and long to try and overcome that, yeah, that one really, really stunk.
Don't forget, if you missed the show, you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Why did this game get away from the Seahawks? We'll ask Mike Salk that question next.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio,
streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Mike Salk joins us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, Seahawks dealt their first loss of the season. I don't want to give you credit here, but that was your bold take for Bold Take Friday.
Well, and I sure didn't want it to be. I don't really want the credit, quite frankly. I mean, it's not like I wanted that to be the case. And certainly they gave themselves every opportunity to win, but I don't think they deserved it. I mean, look, their defense, all the problems that their defense has had throughout the year, they continued to have last night. Yes, they came up with two turnovers, which they desperately needed. And that's sort of been their story of playing like wet paper for most of the game and then coming up with a couple of big plays per game. They did that with their two big plays. But unfortunately for them, they came maybe too early or just not enough. And at the end of the game, Arizona was able to go down the field, what, four times on them? Four times. When they needed a stop, Arizona was able to get down the field for a touchdown and what should have been three different field goals. They had zero sacks in 70 minutes of play. They barely put any pressure on the quarterback. There are moments... I mean, the one advantage they had in this game, which is sad, is that they got so little pressure on Kyler Murray that he wasn't able to spin out and then take off down the field because, quite frankly, they were nowhere close to him. They were just sort of playing patty cake with offensive linemen and keeping him in the pocket. Well, great, you kept him in the pocket, but you never were able to affect him very much. Throw in a bunch of Russell Wilson picks, including the last one, which is a disaster. And an inability in the big moment for Russ to go down the field and do what he's got to do. That's how you win MVPs. You in the final 2 minutes and in overtime, you go down the field and you score. And unfortunately, I'm not going to criticize Russ for the first two picks. They happen. But I am going to say that when you get the ball twice at the end of the game with a chance to go down and win, no matter what happens with your offensive lineman jumping off sides, no matter what happens with pressure in your face, I expect the game's best quarterback to deliver at least once in that scenario, and unfortunately last night he couldn't do it.
And very fair, and I think Russell Wilson would agree with you on that. The very last part of that statement is that he himself, anytime you give him that opportunity, I mean, that's all you can ask for. And that, those are the moments that he lives for and thrives on. Salk, I'm getting to the point here where this conversation's been brewing for a long time. I think you're always in a positive mind frame, especially when you're winning, of, hey, let's see if this can change and how will this change, and they're still in the hunt. So that's still a question that is around this, but there are so many things that have gone on defensively that just have me, I'll just put it plainly, very, very frustrated. Where are you at with this defense, and particularly Ken Norton Jr.? Because I'm seeing mistakes in certain coverages. I'm seeing just things that are going on, and they're not fixing this. They had a bye week, and they're not fixing these issues.
Well, I guess I would, I don't know enough about the mistakes, Jake, to know who to blame them on. I don't know enough to say it's Ken Norton Jr., to say it's a coaching issue, or to say it's a scheme issue. All I know is they're exactly what we expected them to be before the season began. Not very good. They don't put any pressure on the quarterback. They don't play great defense in general. They haven't tackled particularly well. And the guys that we thought were going to be problems have turned out to be problems. And then maybe the worst part of it is some of the guys that you were sort of counting on to be great for you have not been. And I certainly don't want to make this a call-out Bobby Wagner segment. I mean, that's not fun. Everybody loves Bobby and everything he's done for the team. But let's be clear. A couple of years ago, the Seahawks made a big-time decision. They had to pay two of their three big guns, Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, and Frank Clark. They made the choice to trade Frank, pay Bobby, pay Russ. I think as we sit here today, it is undoubtedly the right decision to have paid Russell Wilson what you did. But do you feel 100% sure that they did the right thing in trading Frank and paying Bobby? Frank Clark continues to matter and show up game after game, helped his team win the Super Bowl last year. And I'm not always capable of knowing what it is that makes a linebacker effective over the course of a game. But whatever it is, I sure didn't see it last night, at least from the layman's perspective, with Bobby Wagner. So I don't want to start taking shots, but last year we said, okay, how are we going to get Bobby back? What do you need up front? And maybe they don't have it yet. Maybe when Snacks Harrison is in there and they fix some of the defensive line issues up front, we're able to see the same old Bobby Wagner that we have for the last decade. But otherwise, I'm seeing a guy in the middle that isn't making the kind of big-time plays that I've come to associate with Bobby. So look, I don't want to just blame one person. Is it Ken Norton? Is it Bobby Wagner? Is it the pass rush? Will it help when Jamal Adams comes back? Gosh, there's so many.
Oh, we might have
Point the finger at anybody.
Mike, those are great points, bringing up that comparison there between Frank Clark and Bobby Wagner. I'll go positive here for a second. Could you see a scenario where every Little League coach, every Pop Warner coach, high school coach, whatever, across the land gets tape of the DK Metcalf play and shows that to their young players in order to teach them what it is to be a true team player?
God, I hope so, right? I mean, for all of the grief that he took, rightly, for the mistake a few weeks ago and easing up before the goal line, he more than made up for it yesterday. I mean, what an absolute monster play from a hustle standpoint, reminiscent of a few in the past, right? You got Leon Lett getting caught. You got the Larry Allen play where he chased somebody down from the Saints a few years ago. And I immediately thought of Ben Watson catching Champ Bailey right in the Champ corner of the end zone. One of the most incredible plays I've ever seen in a playoff game. And just an athletic freak show Ben Watson was. But seeing DK Metcalf and his, I mean, forgetting about the hustle, how about just the physical freakiness catching a really fast safety from an 8-9 yard head start and doing it not just to catch him, but to explode through him for the tackle is truly amazing. I mean, what a physical freak DK Metcalf is.
Mike, I know that yes or no questions aren't the best interview questions, but I'm going to ask you one. Can the Seahawks defense, if the Seahawks don't make a move on defense, can they win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, they can. Sure. Am I betting on it? I think it's going to be hard. Is it going to take another worldly effort from Russell Wilson nearly game in, game out? Yeah, probably. And does it depend on, A, the amount of attrition they have versus everybody else? I mean, look, you're going to get Jamal Adams back here next week. You're going to add Snacks Harrison, who's been a really productive player. Hopefully those things help them. But, again, it's hard to see that without an addition on the edge, somebody who can get after the quarterback, that the defense is going to improve too much. So what are you relying on? Well, you're relying on Russell Wilson. And I'm going to tell you, when Chris Carson came out of that game last night, the Seahawks changed. Say what you want about letting Russ cook, and it's all about the offense, throwing the ball all over the place. Yeah, okay, great. When Chris Carson came out, guess what happened? They looked the same sort of mortal that they did last year when he went out just before the playoff time. I know that Russell's a great player, and he's so much better in the pocket than he used to be, but their offensive line was dominating Arizona early in that game. By the end of the game, with no Chris Carson, and you take a major step back, when you end up going to Carlos Hyde, I think that much is now obvious. They were not nearly the same team. And in fact, when they had three chances, or the chance to get a first down at the end of the game to ice it, they weren't able to do it. And then you lose Travis Homer. And I know we've all been guilty of ripping on Travis Homer because he's not a great running back. But guess what he is? A really good blocker back there. And you saw the DJ Dallas completely whiffed on a block, which ended up blowing up a possession at the end of the game. And that mattered. Yeah, of course, Stacey, it's possible. Yeah, they can absolutely win a Super Bowl with this exact defense, but it's going to take so much more.
He is Mike Salk. You can hear him every day at 12:30 right here on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. See ya.
All right, I'm going to ask, the three of us, you two, and also our listeners, the same question. Can the Seahawks win a Super Bowl without making a move on defense? We're going to ask ourselves whether or not they have no excuse but to make a move next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Can the Seattle Seahawks win a Super Bowl without making a move on defense? That's the question we're asking ourselves. It's the question we're asking you. Text into the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710. Most common answer right now is no, they absolutely need to make a move. That's probably because the trade deadline also coming up here, so we all have trades on our mind, looking around the rest of the league to see what's there. You're probably not going to find an elite pass rusher, but Jake, you've been looking at a couple guys the Seahawks could trade for, so I want to break this conversation into two questions for all of us, and I'll let you guys go first with these. Number one, what fatal flaws were exposed with this loss? Because the thing with winning and being undefeated is that it allows you to look past some of those fatal flaws. One, what fatal flaws were exposed? Tom, I'll let you go first.
Teacher, I'm not ready. Fatal flaws, everything. Everything. I mean, the main thing being that they can't, you know what's funny? They can make a stop in the red zone. How many times have we seen them do that? Whether it's on the, you know, the final drive of a game or in the middle of the game, like after the Baker interception last night. Jordan Brooks coming up with that fourth down stop. I mean, they're terrific at that at times. It's stopping opposing offenses from going from the 25-yard line into the end zone. And you know, there's various ways in which offenses have scored on them, like for those touchdown plays. But they just give – I have no faith in them that they're not going to at least allow a team into field goal range on every possession. Every possession. And the ones that they don't are usually the ones where they come up with that big play that we always talk about, right? This is still a big play defense. And they didn't have a ton of those last night. They did on those four straight downs in the red zone, and then Diggs made an interception. That was a big play to turn it right back around. But if they don't come up with those big – oh, and Puna, too. Puna had the forced fumble. That was big. And I'll come back to Peach cheerleading later. I thought that was kind of funny. But if they don't get that big play, they just don't make stops. I mean, how many times have we seen them – actually force punts? Not that often. I mean, if we were to look that up, I would guess that they would be toward the low end of the league in that stat, is getting, you know, whether it's three and out or two series or whatever, just forcing the other team to punt. They just can't do it.
Yeah, Arizona Cardinals got into the red zone five times. Tom, like you're saying, they were moving down the field, scored touchdowns on three of those. Jake, what's Seattle's fatal flaw on defense?
Their fatal flaw on defense? I think there's two fatal flaws that they have right now. I mean, the first one's first, as we mentioned, zero pass rush right now. It is. Last night, I wanted to throw something. When you have 50 dropbacks by a quarterback, and I know Kyler Murray, he's slippery, and he is, you know, one of the more difficult quarterbacks in the league to sack. Well, then at least hit the guy. At least get some pressure on him. One pressure. One out of 50. I mean, I don't understand that. And there's zero quarterback hits, zero sacks in the game. That is embarrassing. If you're a defensive line, if you're a defense, that's just it's embarrassing. That you should take that personally and be frustrated by your performance. That's first and foremost. And I firmly believe that John Schneider has to be on the phone and has to be calling everyone in the league to figure this out. This is priority number one right now for John Schneider as you're looking at the trade deadline. I would love to see J.J. Watt, Carlos Dunlap, or Ryan Kerrigan being figured out how to come to Seattle here, one of those three players. The other thing is that you look at the Seahawks, and they're playing to survive. They're playing to be conservative. And when you're so afraid of giving up the big play down the field, and I know that that was an emphasis for them, but when you play so conservatively and almost kind of scared, it yields the results that they're getting. And you look at the difference between Seattle and Arizona at the end of the game yesterday. Arizona, instead of just sitting there and getting softer and taking Russell Wilson, just absolutely slicing and dicing them for most of the game, what did they do? They changed. They made an adjustment. They actually got aggressive. And sure, was it desperate? Yeah, it was desperate. But sometimes as a defensive coordinator, you need to change things up and become desperate and see if it sticks when nothing else is working. And nothing was working for the Seahawks defense, and yet they didn't change from the status quo. And I think that that is something also that really is frustrating to watch. If you're going to go down swinging. Go down swinging. And they definitely didn't take any chances in this game against Kyler Murray.
What's taking a chance look like with this defense? So if you're Ken Norton, and I know none of us are defensive coordinators. This is us as armchair quarterbacks, you know, looking at it, seeing, like, what would taking a chance look like if I'm just a fan listening to you right now, Jake? What's something you would have wanted to see them do on defense late in the game?
Dial up pressure. Dial up pressure. I mean, look at what they did versus the Minnesota Vikings the week before, before they went into the bye week, the game before. When things were struggling, they started to dial up more pressure. And it worked. It worked for them. It caused some disruption. It got Kirk Cousins to get off his platform and to get out of his rhythm. And that's what ended up happening for them. And you started to change something. And I think that when you look at this scheme right now, that's the part that is broken with this group. It is a mentality. It is a mentality to survive rather to enforce. And this defense does not have that same enforce mentality. Yeah, having Jamal Adams not a part of the equation certainly hurts you. But I think that's a big part of the equation to this. And it was shocking. I was so excited at the beginning of the game, guys, when the Seahawks scored early. Then they got a three and out on the very first possession for the Cardinals. That never happened.
Best version of the Seahawks was possessions,
honestly,
1-2.
Correct. I thought that the Seahawks were going to win 48-10 at that point.
Hey,
this is going to be the game, right? But you don't see enough of that, and it's because they play to survive instead of being aggressive and being the enforcers.
Yeah. One, you know, Collinsworth brought up a good point last night, and it has to do with this stat that Kyler Murray was pressured on just one of 48 dropbacks. One out of 48. I mean, you'd think that just by the law of averages, once in a while you might just win a matchup, right? I mean, whether it's Benson Mayoa or Jaron Reed or Puna or whoever is lined up there, you'd think you know what? They got football players. We got football players. You know, once in a while, we're just going to win. Not because we're generally better, but because, you know, once in a while, you're just going to. And they only
and
won,
if you get
I mean, fifth, one out of 40.
50 chances. Out of 50 just, chances.
That just defies the order of the cosmos. I just don't understand it at all. I'll tell you another thing that makes me nervous is when opposing offenses get an extra down because of a penalty that they committed. Say it's a false start or they hold or something. I know it backs them up yardage-wise, but be honest. Ask yourself this, okay? Let's say it's third and four, okay? And the opposing offense gets called for a hold. Now it's third and 14, but it's wouldn't you almost rather like have them not get the down over with? See, you see what I mean? Like, because the other team can get 14 yards on this defense, no problem. You give them an extra down, and even on situations where they penalize themselves, it's like getting that first down is no problem in that situation. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, and it's frustrating to be in this position. And the other reality and the other fatal flaw, and Stacey, you pointed this out at the top of the show, is that the reality is Russell Wilson has to play so good, so perfect for this team to win. And we saw last night, if Russell has an off night, and his off night was better than any off night that I've ever seen in quite some time. But he threw three interceptions. And it's difficult on anybody to win football games like that. But this defense has zero chance of upholding and giving your team a chance to legitimately win the football game despite bad play on the offensive side of the ball. And I think that that is the stark reality. And you've got to really – you look at this offense, the Seahawks offense, they can't afford many more days like that. And I think that when you look at that group, this will be a good opportunity for them to look inward and to be able to say, hey, we're going to improve. We can't afford mistakes like that. But defensively, all of those – harsh realities that we just talked about, you know, wrapped up in one, this offense has to perform at an extremely high level each and every single week to give this team a chance. And I just hope, as Pete is the, you know, fatal optimist, that with Snacks Harrison coming in and Jamal Adams coming in and that someday, sometime, Daryl Taylor, who hasn't played in a year and is a rookie, that he's going to come in and provide a spark.
All right.
So
we'll get back to this with a chance to explain all of our answers at 1:30 in the halftime show, but I'm going to make us all with a yes or no answer right now to sum up this section, because we asked the listeners, can the defense win a Super Bowl without adding someone? Tom, yes or no?
Yeah, they can. It sounds weird to say after what we've seen this season, but yeah, they believe it or not, they can.
Jake?
Their offense is that good.
I don't believe so. No.
All right. I think they can, but that's completely contingent on what Jamal Adams looks like when he gets back. All right. It's not all down bad news today. We're going to take a look back at some highlights from the game, specifically Tyler Lockett. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.